Good morning.
I'm very honored to be here. Happy to be visiting Port of Spain again. So we're in 2084 on the fictional island of Bajacu, where climate breakdown has already happened. And it's so hot that if you go out in the day, the sun will kill you. Just to tell you a couple of words, the Domins are the government, a sort of shadowy government force, and PLAC is technology, a type of computer. Sorrel and her mother, Bibi, have left their home in the city to try and seek higher temperatures and cooler climate in the mountains so that they can live a more normal life. They left the house on Buttercup Avenue at 1900 hours, joining a thin stream of males and females with their varied burdens in search of shelters outside the immersion zone. Males and females rarely met in person anymore, except for travel. Sorry knew very little about boys. She had met her best friend Sesame's brother a few times. He was older, closing on 20. He was somber and spoke little. He had a deformed arm and therefore had not been assessed by the Domins at puberty. If boys had enough male hormones, they were taken away for violence training at various camps. They became the rangers of the Domin force, comfortable with fighting and doing damage. The ones who were sent back to their families for weakness were ashamed and often walked out from their homes when the sun was at its height. They were never seen again. Some of the females in her education cohort had lost their brothers to violence training, and they talked about them in chat rooms. They had found it hard to believe their brothers could be made dangerous. But Sorrel remembered the males who had killed the old woman and eaten her fruit, and she did not contribute to those conversations. The skateboarders passed them easily. Soon there would be no more roads. Skateboards were not good for long journeys. Sorrel wondered what plans the other people had. She wished she knew them, even the males, knew anybody. She thought about the tribals. Somehow the word appealed to her. A tribe was something you belonged to, people who had your back. Maybe the tribals would take her in. She hooked her thumbs into her backpack straps and leaned into the weight of all her remaining possessions. She was thirsty already. At the brow of the hill, they saw no sign of a track, which was a good thing, because it meant no one else had thought of the old aqueduct as a trail to anywhere. The hill fell away in darkness. "We go down sideways," Bibi said, and her boot slipped. She caught her balance. "We're mad to try this," Sorrel thought. "We should go back," she said to her mother. "There's time. We'll find a place tomorrow night." "No," Bibi said. "We can do this. This way. Why'd you put away the plaque? We need the light function." They slipped and slid down the slope led by the plaque's small cone of light. They did not look ahead. They did not know where the hill ended or if they were going in the right direction. Sorrel felt her thighs stiffening from the unaccustomed movement of walking downhill, and she wondered how her mother was doing. The only sounds they heard were their scraping, tentative steps and the fall of loose stones. At least there were no more mosquitoes on the lowlands. They had died off when rain started to evaporate as soon as it fell. Maybe there would be mosquitoes in the mountains, but if there were mosquitoes, there would be fevers. Bibi stopped. Sorrel could hear her mother's breath coming hard. She looked up at the sky, searching for any signs of the coming dawn, which would kill them. The night was impenetrable. Not the velvet black of the past she had read about and seen pictures of, but the dark gray of dust from those far-off places which had lost all their water. In the pictures, the clean black old-time skies had been pricked with stars. She had not seen a star in years. Maybe she would see stars in the mountains. "Come on," Bibi said, as if she had not been the one to stop. The slope had lessened. Sorrel turned the plaque on, the light of the plaque, to sweep the landscape and saw rocks everywhere. There was almost no chance they would stumble upon the aqueduct in the darkness. "Maybe this is the last night of my life," she thought. She wondered if dying of heat stroke would hurt, like burning, like the scorching of the rock on her cheek when she'd been a child. It would have been better to be caught in the frozen parts of the world, she decided, freezing seemed easier than burning. The land was definitely flatter. They walked faster and felt the small breezes created by movement. A much larger rock loomed to their left. That had to be the sign of a river, too large to be moved by the flash flooding caused by rain bombs and hurricanes. "Let's rest for a bit over there," she said, pointing at the rock. See if we have signal and can find ourselves on a sat map. Have a little drink." "We don't have time," her mother said. "We can't just blunder around until it's day," Sorrel said, the universe of mother and daughter shifting again. She led the way to the rock, which loomed above their heads. It was nestled into the slope on one side, jutting out smooth and round like something man-made on the other. Sorrel saw there was a gap between the rock and the slope. "Guata," her mother cursed, and then her voice was drowned by barking. Feral canines racing towards them. They were caught in the open. Sorrel stuffed the plaque into her backpack and threw it towards the top of the rock. She did not wait to see if it bounced off. She grabbed her mother's hand and pulled her towards the gap in the rock. "Climb," she yelled above the barking, bearing down on them. "Put your feet in the gap. You'll find cracks. Climb, baby, climb." She placed her hands on her mother's bottom and pushed. The weight eased. Her mother was climbing. She heard scrabbling behind her, and then the feral pack was upon them. She slid her body into the crevice behind the rock just as teeth closed on her right boot. Definitely canine. She kicked. Her boot started to loosen. If she lost her boot, they were dead. She kicked again. The feral worried at her boot, shaking it from side to side, snarling. She felt its cold teeth through her socks. Something bounced against the rock and hit the feral. It yipped, and her boot was free. She began to climb. It was easy with her back pressed against the earth, and the rock was warm and welcoming. When her head emerged, she saw her mother sitting on the smooth rock, her backpack gone. Sorrel looked for her own backpack and could not see it in the dark. Her mother must have thrown her backpack at the ferals. At the very outset of their journey, they had lost all their supplies except a little water. She went over to her mother. "Did they bite you? Are you bleeding?" asked Bibi. "No, I don't think so. It had my boot." "You threw the backpack?" "Yes, there was nothing else." They sat, back to back, knees to chest. Maybe they were safe for a while up high, sitting on the warm rock. The feral snuffled and barked. "They might get into the backpack," Sorrel said. "Did you see where mine went?" "No," Bibi said. "Can we both fit in that space we climbed up in during the day, I mean?" "I don't think so, but we might have to try." They waited, watching the sky for signs of lightning. Sorrel was calm. If the choice was between frying on the rock and being torn apart by a pack of ferals, she knew which she would choose.